Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello, Dougie Doug Mellard.
Hey, Doug Benson.
Today we've got two characters from the Suicide Squad movie on the show.
No way.
Yeah, they're both played by Steve Agee. He's King Shark, or at least ran around in the King Shark costume, and then they used Stallone's voice afterwards, but he did the heavy lifting. And he's also the guy sitting next to Amanda Waller, who has a conscience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Longtime friend of mine, I was going to say of the show. It's his first time on this show. But you know him from Sarah Silverman Program, Guardians of the Galaxy, Superstore, constantly working character actor, and an excellent photographer to boot. Ooh. Also talked me through it when I was in the hospital with a kidney stone.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was really comforting. So let's go to work. Hello, Steve Agee.
Oh my God. Hi, guys. Hi, Dougs.
Hey, hello.
How's it going, man?
It's going great. I'm finally back in LA after, you know, a very, 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 very long time.
Yeah, I mean, you shot a movie and a series, and then I also heard that you were crashing in different places because
of the pandemic. Yeah,
everything was crazy.
I got back from Suicide Squad like 2 weeks before the pandemic lockdown, and so nobody was showing apartments or houses or anything, so it was just like scrambling to find a place to stay. And so I ended up, you know, hiding out in Joshua Tree for like the first half of all of that.
Which is not a bad deal. I went out to Palm Springs a few times during it, and just just to get away and hang out somewhere where you can just, you know, be outside all the time. And so that must have been cool. But also, you knew after Suicide Squad that you'd be in the Peacemaker TV series, right?
No, we finished that, and I thought that's it. Hopefully this. You know, we knew shooting it that it wasn't coming out for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And I just thought that's it for, you know, John Economist and King Shark. You know, hopefully the movie does well and we get a sequel so I can do more, but that'll be a while. And then last August or September, James called me and said, "Hey, I didn't want to tell you this, but because I didn't want to get your hopes up. But now that it looks like it's happening," he's like, "we're going to do a spinoff with John Cena's character. And we want you to be in it." And so I didn't find out till like, God, it was September or October of last year. And then within two months, I was up in Vancouver.
I thought, like, you know, watching the movie, I was just like, damn, this is like beautiful the way they're setting up Steve for the series. But that's not what was going on at that point.
No,
like James Gunn wrote the Peacemaker series as like just something to do during the pandemic, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty much stuck, you know, looking at edits and giving notes and visual effects stuff from home. And I think it was going so well that Warner Brothers said, "Hey, if you could do a spinoff of one of the characters, who would you choose? And he said, Peacemaker. And they just were like, yeah, let's do it. 8 episodes, start writing it. And he really thrives on, like, you know, time restraints and like schedules. And so he wrote it in like just a few months. It was like 8 episodes all by himself, no writer's room. And they're really solid. And like, even the drafts that came in after the first ones didn't change that much.
Wow.
Yeah. That's he's pretty talented. And just the way that he has so much great character development in his films that are only 90 minutes, 2 hours long, like, him doing being behind, you know, in charge of a series. I'm just so excited because
it's 8 hours.
It's going to be a really interesting show, I think.
Yeah. Everyone has arcs in this. It's, oh my God, man. I was really looking forward to the movie. I knew it was going to be awesome and like huge and cinematic, but this TV show is so out of control, man. Ooh. It's going to be great.
Very excited for the show and for you. We talk a lot about names here, and this is one of the weirdest, not weirdest, but it's a thing I didn't know about the two of us, but our first and middle names are just transposed.
You're Douglas Stephen Benson.
Yeah, and you're Stephen Douglas Agee.
Yeah,
I'm Stephen. We never figured that out until today.
Oh, I was hoping I was going to be able to blow your mind with that fact that I'm a Douglas.
Really? That was the fact that you warned us about?
Yeah, I was like, I've never talked to Doug that my middle name is Doug or Douglas, and yeah, it was my father's first name.
No, we do.
My parents pulled it out of their ass. They were just, every time I ask them why Douglas, they were just like, we just both thought, let's call it Douglas.
It's weird too, because with my name, I always go by Steve, but saying Steve Douglas Agee sounds weirder than like Stephen Douglas Agee.
Yeah. Or Steve Doug is, those names just don't work together as a first and middle name.
No, Stephen Doug Agee sounds really weird too.
Yeah, you really need those double syllables are really good. Like, that's why I think that Douglas Stephen Benson works, is because it just got a rhythm to it. But, nobody ever hears all of it anyway.
Other Doug, what's your middle name?
Kyle. So, yeah, that is why it's weird. Because it's
Doug Kyle?
Doug Kyle or even Douglas Kyle. That's also weird because it's got that sudden, abrupt, you know, stop.
I mean, Doug Kyle, you might as well call yourself Dog Pile.
Yay, another horrible nickname.
I won't say it again, I promise.
No,
just the listeners will. You're gonna get all these tweets.
Also, Steve, this is a kind of a sidebar, it doesn't have to do with names really, but I think you're the actor that I've worked with the most.
Yeah,
either together or just we're in the same thing, we don't have scenes together.
Yeah, You're the Worst, Sarah Silverman. What else have we've done?
Another Period.
Another Period. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Another Period. You and I are only in that show for one scene and it's together.
Yeah, like half a second.
Yeah, you and me and Andy Kindler. And then we're
going to see voices. Like a porn show.
We're both voices in Trover Saves the Universe.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is, that was the most, like, just, you know, when I played the game, I just intentionally did everything wrong to hear what my character, how my character would insult the player.
Yep. Me too. That was a lot of recording. You were in a room like just, I bet Justin was like, just riff, just keep talking.
Oh
like,
my God. It was exhaustive. So after a while, I just started saying sentences that don't even make sense. And of course, those are the ones he uses because he loves that.
Yeah. He loves when you fuck up or say shit that makes no sense.
Everybody check out Trover Saves the Universe. If you haven't yet, you can get it like in a form where you wear a helmet, you know, and it's virtual reality or whatever. But you can also just play it normal, or you can even just go on, I probably shouldn't recommend this, but you can go on YouTube and just watch somebody else play it if you want. It's so funny. It's just such a funny game. It's so exhausting that to make something like that. I don't know how he does it.
I don't either. I mean, that's pretty much all I do. I mean, it's the same. The whole process is also just the same as Rick and Morty. You know, it's the same thing when you go record a Rick and Morty episode. It's like, just talk, just keep going. Don't stop talking. And then as soon as you fuck up, that's what they use.
As soon as you break, like if you laugh during a sentence, it's
yes, yeah, totally.
All right. So we got Suicide Squad. The Suicide Squad is on HBO Max for another few days. It's only on there for a month, so it'll be gone by September something. Yeah. And then, of course, it's playing in theaters. I recommend trying to get out and see it in IMAX if you can.
Yeah, if you're scared or paranoid, go see an early, you know, matinee. You know, mm-hmm. It really does make a huge difference seeing it. Like, if you can see it in IMAX, that would be ideal.
Ooh. It's just the visuals are so incredible through most of the movie. And then, you know, to see it that large is really, and IMAX screens are never, they're always hundreds of seats. So like Steve is saying, if you go to a matinee, you don't have to sit near anybody and you can leave your mask on if you want to.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty chill.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I always loved about the movies is you could strategically go watch one either by yourself or with only a few other people. Mm-hmm. And
rent a theater, pitch in. And yeah. I have some friends that they all pitched in and they rented a theater.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's a smart move. But then what's the trajectory for Peacemaker? When and where is it going to appear?
Not that far off. It's they're dropping the first three episodes at once in January.
Oh man,
that's just like five months away, I think, 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, that's still too far. I would have started watching it the second the Suicide Squad was over. I was like so invested in moving forward in that story. Also, just I mean, it's nice of James to not, you know, to kind of hold back without getting your hopes up, but also though, you did still sit next to Viola Davis day after day
for a week. Yeah. We shot her. Shot her stuff really, really quick. She's was working on, I think, like two TV shows at the same time. And so we had her for like 2 days at the beginning of the shoot in like September of 2019. And then 5 days at the end of the shoot in January, 2020.
Five like 18 hour days.
No. James always shoots, they call it French hours. It's like 10 hour days. It, like, no matter what, I don't think I ever worked past, you know, if we worked a day instead of a night, I don't think I ever worked past like 7 PM.
Have you ever been in a Clint Eastwood movie?
No, but I hear it's incredible.
I mean, that just sounds like just a walk in the park being in one of his movies. Cause it's, you know, you shoot for a few hours, you break for a long lunch, you shoot for another couple hours and you're gone. He never does more than two takes of anything.
Yeah.
That's why the acting sucks in his movie. I shouldn't say it sucks, but you know, he hires a lot of people that know what they're doing. So they get by fine, you know, but lately he's been doing these movies that are just reenactments of things. And he's just hiring non-actors to do it. And it's just like, what are you doing? You're not good with non-actors.
Oh yeah, that's right.
But also he's a million years old. And so he should just go somewhere and talk to a chair. He's never going to top Unforgiven.
Do you think, by the way, speaking of directors getting older and stuff, do you think Tarantino's really going to only do 10 movies and that's it?
I think he is, just because his passions seem to be able to keep him happy. You know, he doesn't seem like he'd get bored not directing a movie, because he wrote a whole book version of his last movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's seems very hands-on at the New Beverly. Like their schedule is just crazy, because he puts up the most interesting stuff over there. I also think he gets married to certain ideas that I think he's just going to be stubborn about it. Like he decided he's just going to do 10.
And is that or is it like, I'm still going to write, but I just, because I heard him say directors, someone asked him and he's just like, yeah, man, directors don't get better the older they get.
Wow.
That is a great Great point. I dare say all the great directors made a real clunker toward the end.
Yeah.
There's a couple directors I'm waiting on to make a bad movie, but there aren't too many of those. Like, everybody kind of has to eventually because, you know, sure. You just can't control. There's so much that's out of your control. It's amazing when, you know, there's these filmmakers that are out there that, you know, most of their stuff works. Because it's just, you know, like an example is like Edgar Wright's Baby Driver. From that idea in his head to making that movie, he did everything perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, like he executed that perfectly. That movie could suck so many different ways.
Well, it's why, you know? It's also why he was ousted from Ant-Man. He was just like, they didn't want to, I guess, let him do it his way. And
yeah, that was a bummer because that was that, you know, he didn't end up making a movie for like 2 years because he spent so much time kind of perfecting what they ended up using in the movie. You know, like some of his stuff is in there.
Yep.
Okay, so have you met Sylvester Stallone?
I have. I met him very briefly when we were doing Guardians of the Galaxy 2. There was no way in hell that he would have remembered it. You know, it was very overwhelming. It's that scene in, you know, out in the snow where he's yelling at Rooker. So I just met him very briefly. And then the next time I saw him was just like a couple weeks ago at the premiere. I just walked up to him and was like, "Hey man, I feel like," I go, "We've met." I go, "There's no way you would remember it." I'm like, "But I feel like I should tell you. I was the guy who played King Shark on set." And he was super fucking great about it. He was like, "Oh my God, man, I can't believe you had to do all that running." He's like, "That was a lot of running, man. That's amazing." Like, he was super cool about it.
Yeah, you didn't have to run up steps though, like he did.
I had to do a lot of running.
how heavy was that costume?
Or like, with the first, I had this big like foam chest piece that it went through a couple different versions. The first time I got there, the first thing I shot for Suicide Squad was it was just a full day of just me in that aquarium where King Shark's running around with the fish chasing him. You know, where you're saying dumb friend, new dumb friend, like that whole scene where he's just, and it was just a whole day of running, just running. And they gave me it's called a displacement suit, the chest piece. And the first thing they did when they gave it to me, they were like, "We're really sorry. We didn't know it was going to be this heavy."
Oh my God.
And cause it was just foam, but they sprayed it down with something to give it texture. And, it had to have weighed at least 40 pounds. And so that it was really uncomfortable, really tight. But, you know, after about 2 months, they came back and they're like, "Here's a new one." And it was way, 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 way better, which is good because, Panama was really hot and that was a lot of running in Panama.
You start off in, Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And then the production moved to Panama. For how long were you there for?
I think we were there for 3 weeks.
Wow.
We did a week and a half in Panama City, which is where the, you know, all the stuff where the palace was, where Harley is, and like all the really cool, beautiful outside stuff around the palace. And then the second half, we moved to this place called Colon, which was on the eastern side of the Panama Canal, and just like the most run down. That's what we used for, you know, fighting Starro and all the destruction of the city, because it was just, Cologne is kind of in shambles. James wanted something that was colorful because, you know, he uses a lot of colors in his movies, and I think they originally probably wanted to shoot in like Cuba. But there's no way that was going to happen because they have all those pastel colored old buildings, which look really cool. Mm-hmm. And I think the closest thing they could find was Colon, Panama, which it really was like tragically, poetically beautiful. Like it was just, that's where Noriega was, you know, the dictator and what it was, the '80s or seventies, and the whole city rioted and it just got destroyed and everyone left. And so it's just been like that since Noriega. And,
ugh, and now they got to deal with Starro. What a nightmare.
We really fucked them up. But I think the only other thing that shot down there was one of the James Bond movies, the Daniel Craig movies, used it for Haiti, to give you an idea of what Cologne, Panama is like.
Yeah, maybe it was the one where, remember the one where a building collapses and he's on the roof and somehow he just collapses with it and then walks away.
Yes, it might have been, man. It was bonkers, but it looks so good in, you know, in the actual end product. Like, oh my God, it's amazing.
Don't you feel like you could do this King Shark voice?
I would love to do the King Shark voice.
You know, there's you know, creative and financial considerations going into having Stallone be the voice. It's really cool.
I'll tell you what, it would have done more for my career than it would have for Stallone's.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, when James first told me about it, he's like, we need somebody on set to do what Sean did for Rocket. Mm-hmm. in the Guardians movies. He's like, I need somebody tall who's funny and can, you know, improvise if we have to. And he's like, I think you'd be perfect for it. So I always knew I was really going down to do the motion capture. And, you know, as James has said, he wanted Stallone to do it, but he didn't think Stallone would do it. So he didn't ask him until like after we had finished shooting. But before, when we did the table read, I was doing like kind of a deep, menacing voice, you know, and James was just afterwards, James was like, I don't think he's like that scary. So he wanted me to have at least something similar while we were shooting, even though they weren't going to use it. So he's like, think Stallone, but like kind of a slower, dumbed down version of Stallone. And, I was like, all right, so I just talk like this for, you know, the whole time we were shooting. But I just remember going, he's going to use Stallone. It's going to be Stallone. It's going to be Stallone. So I was not surprised when that happened. But yeah.
Well, it's like a tradition for now for James Gunn to give characters that barely speak anyway are voiced by movie tough guys.
Yeah. Also, by the way, I don't know if you saw that article. This movie has put Stallone in a number one movie in every decade for the last, like, since like the 70s.
Yeah. Since Rocky in like 75, 76.
He has been in a number one movie every decade since the 70s.
That's pretty, pretty sweet. He didn't really have to lift too many fingers for this one.
Yeah.
Now he's just coasting on being legendary. And, you know, if they make a cartoon version, I would hope they would just call you and not bother him with it. Give you all that money. You're the closest to the character of anybody, I feel.
Same body.
Yeah. What? No way. He's so wide. Like, he's like, you know, almost feels as wide as he is tall. He's such a big,
Yeah, that's why I had to wear that chest piece. I didn't have to wear the chest piece when we were in like open areas, like when we were out running on the street and stuff when it's wide open. I didn't have to wear that chest piece. I mean, the reason they call it a displacement suit is so if you're in a tight area, like walking through trees in the jungle, I had to wear it. So the VFX crew would know, you know, how far out the bushes would be moving as I'm walking through, or stuff like when we're in the van with everybody. So it's like, so people wouldn't get too close and be inside of King Shark's body. So it's like, you know,
did you get to witness much of Sean Gunn playing the
Weasel?
I never saw it. I never worked on any of those.
Imagining him doing that on set, like that character is so weird.
and that's fully Sean. Actually, I did see, I went to set when they were shooting all the stuff of them riding in the Osprey where Pete's like saying, is this a, what kind of dog is this? And I was there to watch all that stuff, which was really funny, but yeah, Sean is amazing.
Yeah. He did Rocket in both of the Guardians movies. And, but I love that, James makes sure that you guys get, you know, some sort of, speaking role because, yeah. Officially, Michael Rooker and Sean Gunn have both been in all of James Gunn's movies, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, going all the way back to Tromia, was it?
His five movies that he's done, like as a, you know, kind of on his own or whatever.
Oh yeah, but they've been
Slither. Since Slither, it's been him and those guys, and also he's only in a picture in the background, but Nathan.
Yes.
Is also kind of in all five movies.
And also our friend Michaela Hoover, she has a cameo in like all of his movies as well.
Well, you get to say the C word in Super, so that's pretty awesome.
It was funny because he with Super, I was supposed to have a bigger part in that. They were shooting it in Shreveport. I would have had to work as a local hire, which means you basically get yourself to Shreveport and put yourself up and, you know, you just get like a day player rate, which I was like all for, cause I love James. I think all of this stuff is amazing. So I was like, yes, I'll do it. I'd most likely be losing money to go do this, but it was part of one of Kevin Bacon's henchmen. And, like 2 weeks before I was supposed to go, I get a call from my agent going, we got an offer for you for an episode of Two Broke Girls and shot at the same time. And it was for a shitload of money. And I was like, fuck, I was so goddamn broke at the time. I was like, fuck. And so I spent like 4 or 5 days just like pacing around going, what do I fucking do? I need this money, but even though James and I are very close in age, he feels like a father figure to me. I was like, I can't disappoint James. And I just want to keep working with James. And so I eventually called him and I told him the situation. And he was just like, what are you, insane? Of course you have to go do Two Broke Girls. He's like, go do Two Broke Girls. He's like, when we do reshoots in LA, I'll find something for you. And so it was the scene in the comic book store. He called me when they got back and he's like, I have this scene. He's like, it's really small. It's like with Rainn Wilson and you know, you're kind of making fun of him. And just jokingly, I go, I'll do it, but only if I can call him a cunt. And boom, I show up on the day and it's in the script.
Oh my God.
I was like, I mean, I was only joking.
That movie pushed it in every way that it could.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, like, you know, when James had that whole Twitter scandal, I was like, has nobody seen Super? I mean, the
or
man
any of his movies.
Wild, like, ideas.
PG porn, all of his stuff is like dark.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about the name, just the name Steve. Like, growing up, what was your relationship with that name? Like, because as Dougs, we, you know, sort of feel like, you know, it wasn't the greatest name to have, but also it's not terrible.
Doug is a very proper adult name.
Really?
I don't picture little kids named Doug.
Yeah.
It's like Gary. It's like, you never see a baby named Gary. I don't think I've ever gone to see a, you know, friends who have a baby and they're like, this is Doug. It's like, what? Doug's a very, it's like a proper adult name, I think. And I think that the same way with Steve or Steven, it doesn't seem like a little kid's name, but I never had a problem with it. I didn't, I know people who had like names that they're like, ugh, I wish I could change my name.
No, and you see, you know, for whatever reason, you seem like a Steve, you know, how every once in a while you just meet somebody and you go, oh, it's not really, I don't feel like they're the match their name, but
yes,
but Steve has always made sense for you, yeah. To me anyway. And yeah, It's did you ever take Spanish classes in school?
Esteban, yeah, I did. I took 2 years of Spanish.
That's where I got fucked, is because there's no translation for Douglas, so they called me Esteban because that was my middle name.
Oh, see, you have one of those names where it's like you can watch people, you can be in like Mexico and know people are talking about you because you'll just hear Doug.
Yeah, it really stands out. Like if you're watching a French film.
Yes.
There's a character named Doug.
I love TV or movies where there's just like, there isn't a version of that word or name in that language. And so it's just like, Pepsi Cola.
It just really pops.
Mm-hmm.
Have you known, other than myself and having met Doug Mellard a few times, what other Dougs have been in your life? Have you known anybody named Doug?
A really good friend in high school named Doug Sampson, which is a great name.
Yeah, he sounds strong.
And he fully fit that. Nobody fit that name better than Doug Sampson. He always wore sleeveless t-shirts and jeans. He had kind of shoulder length long. He looked very 70s, but this was in the 80s. He drove one of those off-road VW bugs. You know, they're called Baja bugs. You know, it's a Volkswagen with like the bigger tires and a roll cage inside.
Yeah.
And he,
for going out on the beach.
And he took like duct tape and he made the Van Halen symbol on the doors.
Yes.
And there was, he was a perfect Doug. Like he was so great, man. I often wonder what happened to Doug Sampson, man. That dude was great.
Do you think, so you've never really, like, done any steps towards trying to find out whatever happened to him? You just wonder about it sometimes.
I've like Googled or like tried searching on Facebook, but I don't know if you've ever tried looking up someone who doesn't have the most unique name.
Yeah.
And it's just like you go to, you would probably type in Doug Benson in a search on Instagram and there would be like 200 like, you know,
variations, but yeah.
So
yeah, it's true. That's why I'm lucky that, like, for, you know, because of the algorithm or whatever, that I'll be high up on that list. But it is a pretty common name. And Doug Sampson, like, you just know, if you just write Doug Sampson in Google, it's going to show you 50 or more Doug Sampson articles or things.
But I feel like it on Instagram, if there's 200 that pull up, you just look for the one that has the social, like the picture of the VW bug with the Van Halen. Like it seems like he would still have that.
That's gotta be his avatar. You're right.
Yeah.
Or just like, you know, all the account, I get really frustrated when I'll find an account like that, but it's private. And I'm like, oh, I have no idea.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's where, so you knew him in what city were you in?
This was Inland Empire. This was like Redlands, San Bernardino area.
Yeah, so that might help a little bit because I feel like he might not have left that area. Don't you feel like people would just sort of stay there that live there?
A lot of people did, yeah. I have a lot of friends from high school who are still in Riverside and San Bernardino.
Which is good to have them all in one place, right? You can choose to visit when you feel like it.
Yeah, kind of.
Like everybody, for a long time when I lived in LA, everybody in my life that I knew previous to living in LA all lived in San Diego. So it was just easy for me to, you know, see them when I wanted to. And then, you know, eventually pretty much lose touch with everybody.
Are you from San Diego?
Mm-hmm.
Whereabouts?
Born in La Mesa and then lived in, the San Carlos area.
Okay.
I was going to go to, what was it called? Patrick Henry High School.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents moved from San Carlos to El Cajon.
Oh my God.
Right. It sounds like a terrible move, but it was crazy because they did it because, of the, I don't like Mondays shooting that happened at that school.
Oh,
when that girl heard the I Don't Like Mondays song by the Boomtown Rats. And then, it's the other way around. She did it. And then they wrote a song about it. But that I Don't Like Mondays girl, that was a reason for shooting up the school. that was that school. So my parents were like, let's go somewhere else. Like,
man, El Cajon
what's the odds it's going to happen again? You know, really? That's how people.
True. El Cajon is like, that's borderline desert.
Yeah, it's very hot out there, but they had like a performing arts center. So I got to appear in a few musicals there. And,
West, you know, shooting.
And I also just LA, Disneyland and LA and Hollywood were all way too close. Like I was just always driving. The second I could start driving, I just spent so much time leaving San Diego. And then I just worked a few jobs until I could afford to, you know, just move to LA and I never looked back, but it's great to have great to be from somewhere that's a 2-hour drive. So
if
ever did feel like going home, it was easy.
Well, yeah, I always say that. I'm like, you know, there were no stakes in me moving to Los Angeles because if shit didn't work out, I could be back at my parents in an hour. but I was in a band in college and two of the band members were from San Diego. So we would play half our shows in LA and half our shows in San Diego at like Soma and Casbah. And there's a bar called Bodie's, I think, downtown.
And,
and we practiced in Old Town San Diego, and our drummer's parents owned a bridal gown shop, and we would practice in this shop surrounded by bridal dresses.
What was the name of the band?
The Grazers.
The Grazers.
Yeah. Did you ever make any videos?
No.
That would
make some recordings. I got to find those.
That's a good idea for a video, though, a band just playing in a bridal store.
Totally.
Just women walking around trying on dresses.
God damn it. I wish I could go back in time.
Right? Like the women are trying, they're playing and the women have to kind of walk around this band while they're trying to look at their, to see themselves in the mirror.
That would have been so perfect. Like now you could totally do that. This was like the early 90s when nobody could afford a video camera because they were all like $2,000.
Yeah, it was always just an uncle.
Yeah, totally.
I borrowed a camera from Todd Glass once and then it got stolen out of the back of my car.
Ooh.
And out of the trunk while because I parked it overnight and it was in the trunk. I was like, what possibly happened? Somebody broke into it, took it. And Todd was like, well, that wasn't really my camera. It was my mother's camera. So I really can't just, can't just walk away from this. And so Todd set up a payment plan so that I could pay $25 a month until it was paid off. And I did it. And it was, not that difficult to do. And so he got all the money, but it was just like, Todd, that is a really smart way to get money back from a friend. It's just set up a thing where I had to pay it or it would fuck up my credit.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. I kind of forgotten that even happened. Have you ever played someone named Doug in anything, Steve?
Wow. I don't think I have. I've played a lot of Steve's. I somehow, on Sarah's show, I played Steve. Was your character, you played yourself in You're the Worst.
I sure did.
A version of yourself.
Yeah, a wild version of myself that I kind of wish it was real.
Owned an empire, yeah.
But, yeah, that was one where it was funny when I did Curb Your Enthusiasm, they didn't assign me a character name and we're just sitting there riffing and Jeremy Kramer was in the scene with me. And so he would just refer to me as Doug in the scene. And so suddenly I'm playing Doug on Curb Your Enthusiasm, but it was a character. It wasn't me. I'm telling you. I would not behave the way the character does. Did you see that this very morning, Larry David got into a loud verbal argument with Alan Dershowitz?
Yes. I love it.
Yeah. Martha's Vineyard. And Dershowitz was kind of like, why can't we be friends? And Larry David was like, are you insane? Why would I be friends with you?
I will list the reasons.
You're an asshole. Where do I start?
Yeah. And then he's like, hey, it's called. And then he ripped off his shirt and had an underlying shirt that he shows to people when they're arguing with him about him defending Donald Trump. And the shirt says something about the Constitution on it.
Yeah.
And that's his argument. It's like, well, that's the system we have, is that I have to defend that man.
If you have to wear a shirt because you get yelled at so much, you should just dig deeper and think about what you've done, you know?
Yeah, and it was 100%. An undershirt. It was a shirt. He had to take off a shirt to reveal. He's standing. God. I mean, if Larry David doesn't just put this fucking scene on the show, he's crazy. Because it's just hilarious that it's so on brand for Larry David to just, you know, that should be the next season of the show, is just going around to celebrities and giving him shit for supporting Trump. That would be so funny.
I can't remember who I heard this from. I think it was a crew member on another show I was working on, but they said Larry David was driving off the lot at CBS Radford over in Studio City, and someone else was driving onto the lot, like a grip, somebody, you know, a low status teamster who had like a truck that was just spewing like exhaust out of a broken, you know, tailpipe. And, you know, Larry drives a Prius. He's one of the early, you know, Prius celebrities, him and Leo DiCaprio. And this guy's driving on, and Larry's driving off. And the way I was told is Larry just started screaming at the guy, "What the fuck are you doing? Do you know what you're doing to the environment?" And the guy just yelled at him and goes, "I'm poor."
Whoa. That is a good point.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be super frustrating to have all the money to do anything you want with, but you cannot stop pollution.
Yeah. Unless you're Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, he could, but he'd rather go fart around in space.
It is such a white billionaire thing to do.
Oh, if the first one that dies out there, I will applaud them. I'll drink a 40 for them and not spill a drop.
Mm-mm. Nope. Pour it out in space, zero gravity.
All right, we got to take a break, but we've got a very exciting thing coming up in the show, because we've got five questions for you. We've each written five questions specifically for Stephen Douglas Agee, and we will ask you those right after the break. We'll be right back.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts, and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
We're back. We've got five questions for you, Steve Agee.
Okay. But
first, before we do that, we would like to
eat some leftovers.
That's right. We didn't get to all of our questions on last week's show, and we don't want them to go to waste. We're like Larry David. We're very environmentally conscious, you know. And so would you mind answering some questions we didn't get to? Our guest was Andy Wood.
Oh, yeah. I listened.
Oh, you heard it.
Yeah, okay. I didn't finish. I started listening today. I was like, I got to listen to some of this. So I was listening to most of Andy's episode.
Oh, okay. So, you know, we didn't get to his questions, right. And we asked him questions that were for whoever the guest was before that. So,
Seth Herzog.
Yeah. So, let's go ahead and do this. Do Andy's questions, and then we'll go to Steve's. So. Okay. Doug Miller, this is, and you know, you can answer it however you want. You know, what you could speculate what Andy would say, or just answer it from your own perspective.
Okay. I'll preface my answers with Steve or Andy.
Okay. Oh, I love that. All right, Doug Miller, what's the first question?
All right, first question I had for Andy was, how would you have felt had Aaron Rodgers taken over as Jeopardy host? We talked a lot about the different potential host for Jeopardy, because Andy was on quite a few times, but
I think Andy, I would have been fucking furious. I would have written several letters to the network.
Okay, that's a good answer. I like that. We'll see if Andy agrees with that assessment, though.
Probably not.
He'll be like, don't say that. He wants to come back for some super championship or something. We talked a lot about Jeopardy on the episode with Andy. So it's kind of amazing that, you know, I didn't get to this question because I would have really liked to know. And it's sort of similar to Doug's question. I was going to say, you're a Jeopardy champ, Andy. How much longer do you think current Jeopardy champ Matt Amodio is going to go?
Boy, I have not been watching Jeopardy since the turnover, so I don't know as Steve, but I'll answer as Andy, who's very polite and non-controversial. So I hope he goes on for several more weeks.
He has been going for I think 4 weeks now.
Oh my god, that's amazing. That's great.
Good Lord.
Yeah. He's just been going through all the last four guest hosts before they stopped showing those were they each did 1 week, and I think Matt just lasted through all of them, which is another thing that shows what a good player he is, that the different tempo of the different guest hosts didn't throw him off.
Yeah.
So this guy, I think there's a chance he might never lose.
He's going to be like a Ken Jennings.
Well, even more fierce than Ken Jennings, because like Final Jeopardy never matters. I mean, mattered once or twice, but for the most part, he's always got so many more points than everybody else by Final Jeopardy that he can just wager a small enough amount that he's, you know, doesn't matter what happens in Final Jeopardy. In fact, what's his name? What's the name of the sports guy? Joe Buck.
Joe Buck, yeah.
Yeah, he one night when one of the competitors could actually possibly, had enough in their bank to possibly beat Matt. When it came back, you know, because he's a sports guy, you know, he had to say, he's like, well, I'll tell you, this is the first time since I've been here that there's actual tension going into.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Fuck you, previous contestants.
Yeah, because it really is. It's just a, like, some people are in the negative at the end. Like, Matt's only had to go up against one other competitor. Like, he's just got this style, and he knows all the answers, and it's just, I don't know how he's going to get beat. I mean, he will. He'll trip up at some point, but...
Do you know JP Manu?
I do.
He went on Jeopardy, and apparently, I mean, the way the story goes, I believe, is he tried out for it, didn't get on, went back, tried out, and then started to notice a pattern in the questionnaires for the tryouts. So after doing it several times, he got the same tryout quizzes over and over. So he just memorized the answers and then got on the show. And then just at one point just started buzzing in first and giving wrong answers, and has like one of the biggest negative deficits of anybody in Jeopardy.
Just because he thought, I'm not going to win, so I might as well really, really fuck around.
Like, I'm still going to hit this fucking buzzer.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, why not, I guess.
Yeah.
That's good for him, I guess. I feel like I floated this by Andy, and since he was on just recently, I guess it was kind of insulting, but I feel like that the contestants, because of the pandemic, they've drawn from a smaller pool because people aren't, you know, as willing to travel to be on, you know, Jeopardy. So, you know, it's just mostly like California people. And, you know, I personally know about the education system in California. So mm-hmm. I think the contestants have been a little weaker lately, but they also have to deal with guest hosts who have a different rhythm than Dear Departed Alex.
Right.
All right, Doug Mellard, you're up. Question number two.
All right. I was going to try to stump Andy on a couple random trivia questions. First one, how many horses died in World War I? Take a wild guess, or I could give you
I'll guess 2,000 okay. horses.
8 million. You're
what?
Isn't that wild?
What were all the troops eating horses? What?
Well, but think about it. There wasn't like as many like tanks, and you know, there wasn't the you know, it's not, war was very different than it is now. It was more horses, I guess. But yeah, that's 8 million horses. Seems like a lot. That is
just
crazy.
Where they got them from.
I could see that happening in like Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where we drop an entire bomb on an entire city and like everything died. But like, wow, 8 million horses.
Yeah. I mean, I guess bullets going everywhere.
Jeez, that's poor horses.
Yeah. And I guess if a horse, you know, breaks a leg, you know, in battle, then they put it down. So there's probably a lot of that true. As well.
That's true.
They insult the shit out of it, then shoot it.
Yeah.
Put it down.
Yeah, I always love that in Ghostbusters 2 when Sigourney Weaver says to Bill Murray, "Can you, you know, will you put down the baby?" And he goes, "You're ugly, and your mother dresses you funny."
So funny.
It's no, that man has no dick, but it was definitely my favorite line from the second one. All right. So Andy Wood, you're a Jeopardy champ. I should just admit right now, all of my questions are about Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Do you think they made the right choice for the new host, or should they have gone with the ghost of Alex Trebek?
Well, Steve Agee would answer ghost every time.
Yeah. How great would that be? Why can't they just do some hologram shit with Alex and just, he said every word in the English language already on the show. They could create a program that 100%. Just has it read everything.
They could have 100% put that together. They could have made that happen.
Yeah, robot Alex could take over Jeopardy. And then that way, there's no controversy in that, right? Or do people get, you know, people don't like robots taking jobs.
So the controversy is that the guy they chose is like a producer on the show?
The guy they chose himself. After having a talent search of all these amazing, like some of the people on there did a great job and would have been an awesome new host.
Yeah.
And he was all right at it. He's been producing the show for forever. So he knows how to host it, but why him? And then now they just keep, you know, everybody's trying to take him down. So like, you just keep reading things he's said on podcasts and stuff. And, you know, it's just ugly. It's just sad that like, he's probably still going to get to host the show and nobody really wants him to. Like, he's like everybody's second choice at best. You know, like, who's really rooting for that guy at this point? Go, Doug.
Yeah, if Steve and Sly can make a King Shark, then we can definitely have a ghost of Alex Trebek hologram for sure.
Easily.
Another trivia question. When was the first New Year's Eve ball drop in Times Square?
1932.
Well, December 31st, 1907.
But oh, they did it December 31st that year?
Yeah.
Thanks for the clarification.
I would have said the 30th because it was so old timey. It would have taken like 2 days for it to drop.
I wonder what that
I just thought of. I just realized something because I saw it in a post today somewhere. Steve, you can, there are emojis for the title, the name of your character. There's a king emoji, the crown, yes. And yeah. There's a shark emoji. Like that doesn't happen very often.
No, it's perfect.
You know, like David Dastmalchian, his polka dot man isn't going to be, mm-mm. You can't build that in. Maybe you can. How would he do that? Build that in
there's emojis. Like at the very end of the emojis, there's a bunch of like colored circles.
Yeah.
Just do colored circles and then a man's face.
And a man, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not as cool as King Shark, though.
No, it's real nice. It's real clean. It's real, you know, it's a good, it's a good look. I'd put that at the end of every one of my tweets if I were you. I've been using Who Has My Pig a lot because if you, the Nicolas Cage movie Pig, in their promotion of that, they made it so that if you go hashtag Who Has My Pig, actual little pig appears at the end of it. I use that on posts where it says it's not even relevant just because I love Who Has My Pig as a hashtag and then an actual pig shows up.
Is that movie good? I want to see it.
I think you should because if they ever remake it, I think it's a role you were born to play.
The pig?
No, the guy who owns the pig. Okay. The owner of the pig. Because he's like this amazing chef who just, you know, for various reasons decides to say, you know, fuck it all. And so now he just lives out in the forest with his pig and they find truffles together. And that's how he makes a living. And then somebody that wants the pig because of its magic truffle finding abilities steals the pig. And then Nicolas Cage has dialogue about cooking and dialogue about Where's My Pig? And it's all amazing.
He's fantastic in it. He's so good.
You know how committed he is in general. It's one of his more, you know, perfect roles for him in a while. And he, you know, commits to it beautifully. And he gets a laugh in a couple spots where like hardly any other actor would have been able to pull that off, where like it's mostly a serious movie, but you could still have a good laugh with Nicolas Cage and then get back into the seriousness.
I love him so much. When we were shooting Peacemaker up in Vancouver, I got to meet, and we'd been trying to hook up, and I got to meet and have like dinner with Panos Cosmatos, who directed Mandy.
Oh man.
Dude. And I just like, I mean, from second one, all I did was have, you know, Nicolas Cage questions. He loved him. He said he was fucking great to work with. Like he had no complaints about Nicolas Cage at all.
Oh, nice.
I think Nicolas Cage commits really hard and also has like, sometimes he has ideas that he probably pushes too hard, but that's, you know, you just see him making, like, I swear the last few years he comes out with like, you know, five or six starring roles a year and maybe an occasional supporting thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not all great, but enough of them are great that it's just like, damn, this guy really loves to act and really commits to it.
Yeah.
And totally. Me and my girlfriend went to the pig premiere, and at the after party, he's just sitting at a table chilling with his two kids and his ex and his new girlfriend, and they all seem to all like get along and be like this really like artistic family.
Is and, ex Patricia Arquette?
No, the other one.
Oh, okay.
I think he's been to the altar a few times.
Yes. Totally. Presley, I believe.
Yeah.
He's married more women. He's married more women than he's made movies.
Oh wow, that would be impressive. Speaking of impressive, Steve Agee, you took up the whole hour without us ever getting to ask you the questions that we wrote about you. That's how great you are at talking. How interesting you are! I can't wait to ask our next guest.
This is going to be the new format of your show, is like you're asking one guest a previous guest's question for the rest of the series.
Yeah. And then when, you know, the next time a guest cancels on us last minute, Doug and I will just ask each other the questions. Yes. So you'll get so removed from the actual person.
Yes.
Do you have anything to plug, Steve Agee? I know Peacemaker's coming out in January.
That's it. Yeah.
Where is it going to be?
It'll be, it's going to drop the first three episodes. So I don't know the date other than January.
But like what streaming
service? HBO Max.
Oh, okay. So, HBO Max, 8 weeks, first three, sometime in January.
And then the next five will drop weekly.
Yeah. That's the game they've been playing lately with shows. And it really, I don't know how I feel about it, you know, because, I don't know. Like this show White Lotus, I just finished that recently, and I got impatient waiting a week for each episode, but I also liked it enough to just do that instead of trying to binge it all at the end.
It's weird going from a world with three television networks and no internet to now all of a sudden there's some shows you can get all at once every episode, and then you get so used to that that it's like, wait a minute, I'm going to have to wait till next week to watch this shit. What's going on?
I get it though. A lot of shows that they, where they drop all the episodes, like as good as it is, or however much people like it, they don't talk about it week after week. They talk about it when they watch it and then that's that. But, the people tweeting and social media and water coolers week after week after week is still what they need, even though it's not commercial television. It doesn't really matter. It's still just, they just want more views and more subscribers.
I don't know how it'll play out, but I know the show's good. We, James wrote all the episodes and we had some great, James also directed most of them. We had some guest directors like Jody Hill and Brad Anderson, who directed The Machinist, who was great, really had a great time. And it's going to be awesome.
All right. Well, let's move this conversation over to Doug Loves Movies and streaming TV shows. And I'd love to see you over there, Steve. And thanks for being here. Doug Mellor, do you have any plugs?
Real quick, congrats, Steve. I just really like, that's so cool. You're part of the MCU and DC universe. That's awesome. Congrats. That's right.
Yeah. It's very exciting. I'm not a comic book guy, but I still realize how huge that is.
But people now are going to want to be part of the SDU, the Stephen Douglas universe.
Well, all comers are welcome.
DougLovesMovies.com is where you go for. I'm going to do my plug now, Doug, since you use your plug time to talk about Steve.
I've got a new album coming out. I'm Worried About Me, September 3rd, out everywhere. You can do pre-sales now on iTunes.
Cool. I'm doing The Road. I'm doing Moon Tower. I'm doing lots of things that I probably might, maybe shouldn't be. And you can get all the details at DougLovesMovies.com. And we always try to do like a play on words at the end to give as the title of the show and the closing words. So for this one, I will just say, as always, Doug saves the universe.
Got it.